houses have been destroyed. More than 3 million Syrians have left their homes. More about 600,000 people are outside Syria now. All that's in addition to the bombardment and raids. So security is zero. Even if you go in the street, you're not sure what's going to happen. Roadblocks all over, especially in the city of Damascus. If it takes you to go for 2 kilometers, you need about 2 hours. So this is pretty shabby. The dangerous thing is the economic situation as well. The dollar has been soaring. Prices have tripled, I tell you. So can you imagine how about people who don't have income, how the situation is? No fuel, no medicine now. Medicine is lacking. It's very scarce. Factories have been destroyed. Businesses have closed down. Businessmen have fled the country to start businesses outside to invest maybe in Egypt or somewhere else in Europe. And this is bad again. So I can't tell how much people can wait, how more they can go like this. It is a very bad situation when the world is doing nothing, just sitting idle, saying words. Some people talk about chemical weapons being used. So I don't know what the world is waiting to interfere and put an end to this tragedy.
Thabit, you know, I mean, hearing you talk about how difficult the situation is in Syria and in Damascus, where you are, I mean, it's such a contrast to 2 years ago when, you know, you felt that, you know, Syria was a country that was, you know, on the rise in a way, maybe culturally, not politically, but culturally. And, you know, Damascus was the, you know, cultural city of the year. It was 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, many people were recommending Syria as a holiday destination. I just want to know your feeling as a Syrian citizen to go from there to the situation you're describing to me now.
As I said, it is a sad story. It is really an epic. The Syrian people are going through. It is epic in the full sense of the word. Syria is known to be the gem of the world. You know, a French scholar said once, you have two homelands, your own and Syria. That is, he attributes this to what Syria gave to the civilization. It is the store of all phases of civilizations Earth has witnessed, starting in the early stages of people who settled 12,000 years BC in the settlements on the Euphrates until now. Imagine all kinds of civilizations passed through this country. The Syrian people themselves, even the simple peasant, if you are a sophisticated journalist or whatsoever, you try to tend to write an editorial. A Syrian peasant who maybe is illiterate will give you a proverb that sums up all your editorial, and you feel sort of you have no words to answer him. So Syria is really the treasure of civilization, and it's a sad thing what's happening to it. The Syrian people themselves are really educated. They have inherited the civilization. It goes into their blood. So imagine what's happened now. Syria doesn't deserve this.
Thabit Salem, thank you so much. Thabit Salem there, a Syrian journalist working in Damascus. And before that, we heard from Ahmed in Damascus as well, describing a very dire situation in the Syrian capital. Well, we've promised you we'll also go back to Egypt to get more reaction to the passing of this controversial constitution. So let's do that. Let's go to Egypt's second city, Alexandria, and speak to Abdulrahman Ibrahim. Abdulrahman, welcome to the program.
Hello.
So let's get your reaction on the latest news. The constitution has passed.
Well, I am actually ecstatic that it passed, but somewhat disappointed because I actually thought that it was going to pass with 70% or more.
Oh, so you're disappointed that it didn't pass with more?
Yes. I actually thought it was going to pass with something like 70 or 80%. But I'm just very happy that it finally passed. I hope it'll bring stability to the country. I hope people will stop staging protests. I just want the country to settle down right now.
Right. Well, you have used a very strong word, ecstatic, that this has passed. We've heard from two Egyptians just earlier on the program, Hani and Eileen, and Hani called it a shameful day for Egypt. What do you say to that?
All right. Basically, I initially had many doubts about the constitution, but when I read more and got a more informed and expert interpretation, I saw that it was a perfect constitution and I supported it. It doesn't contain anything outrageous, as most TV stations say. All past NDP members are not allowed to participate in the political system, which is fabulous. Freedom of speech, thought and choice is safeguarded in the constitution. Contrary to what most people say, I think that it's a perfect constitution, and it's time for Egypt to get some stability. We need this. We can't stage any more protests. The economy of Egypt is going to the ground, and soon we're not going to have any more food to eat. So we need this right now.
Okay, well, you say that it's a perfect constitution, and even the most senior members in the Muslim Brotherhood will tell you that it is not a perfect constitution, but they say that whatever issues people have, they could discuss in the parliament. That's one. But the other thing is that many people will tell you that they are worried about freedom of expression, they are worried about the rights of minorities, they are worried about the rights of women. We've had Eileen say that this constitution does not safeguard her rights as a woman, so not everybody shares your sentiment.
Well, look, we as Muslim Egyptians, we are a Muslim majority, do not believe in a unrestricted type of freedom. We do not wish for example, atheist or homosexual movements proclaiming their insolence and what they call free minds. They are free to believe what they wish within the sanctity of their homes, but not proclaim it and stage mass demonstrations blaspheming without consequences. This is but one of the answers that I've heard on television from Muslim Brotherhood members, and so We do not want total unrestricted freedom, which leads to corruption of morals and values, but believe in a type of freedom that conforms to our commitments. Enough of this restriction of free speech nonsense.
I mean, we can spend the whole day speaking about who decides what the morals and values are, but hearing you speak and just hearing Hani and Eileen speak earlier, it seems to me that this is going to be an ongoing division. Do you foresee more polarization and division in the country?
Actually, of course I do. I mean, like, there are many people who supported the Constitution, and even though it has passed, I think people will still continue to oppose the political process. People will still stage demonstrations. For example, a very prominent political figure called Hamdin Sabahi, he himself said, "We will stage demonstrations regardless of the results of the referendum," because they believe that it was that they played with the votes. This is what they're thinking. So I do think that there's going to be a lot of division in the country in the days and weeks to come.
And finally, Abdurrahman, just briefly, you're speaking to us from Alexandria, and I've just been to Alexandria. It has seen some of the worst violence in recent weeks. I've been to downtown Alexandria where I saw the remains of, cars that have been set on fire, broken glass, Molotov cocktails. I mean, are you worried about your city being engulfed in even more violence?
Of course, I am very worried. I mean, like, the past Friday, the sheikh in the mosque was speaking about the constitution after the sermon finished. And just because he was offering his opinion, saying that we should say yes, just offering his opinion outside the sermon, people got incredibly violent. They burnt his car. They threw Molotov cocktails. They used knives. And they were just, like, insulting and throwing rocks around. So I'm very worried about my city, and I think this is probably going to happen again soon.
Abdurrahman, thank you so much for speaking to us. Abdurrahman there from Alexandria, Egypt's second city, reacting to the news that the controversial constitution that has polarized the country has passed with a nearly 64% vote. Well, another story that we've been talking about, and you have been sending us your reactions and, of course, your comments about, is Hurricane Sandy that left thousands and thousands of people in New York homeless, and people have basically lost their homes and their livelihoods. Well, let's go to Matt Miner. He's a comic book writer living in Rockaway. Matt, thank you so much for joining us, and Merry Christmas to you. Tell me what it's been like for you in those last few months.
Hi, Merry Christmas to you, too. The last couple of months have been pretty hard for us in Rockaway. Things are really messed up here, and it seems to be largely off the mainstream media's radar anymore. There's a lot of public housing in our area with low-income people, and they're stuck in these houses, and the government isn't doing anything as far as mold remediation. So now they're breathing. You know, they're going to start having respiratory problems. Their water is polluted. You know, and these are poor people, and the government's just kind of wishing them under the carpet.
What has it been like for you day to day?
Day to day, well, I mean, I work from home. So once we got power back, I was able to start working again on my computer. So day to day for me, I mean, it's really hard to get to the city, get into Manhattan anymore. You know, the subways are washed away. So we have to take buses to a part of the subway that isn't destroyed. But day to day for me has largely returned to normal, but, you know, I don't have to get around much.
Matt, you mentioned something that was, you know, quite interesting. You said that, you know, the story has fallen off the radar of mainstream media. Do people around you, you and your friends and other people that you know, do you feel abandoned because there was so much attention and now not so much?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the American public has a very short-term memory. And once it's off the news and once mainstream media stops covering it, people kind of stop caring. And, you know, once people get their power back, for the most part, people, you know, forget about the people who don't have their power anymore. So, you know, it's very frustrating to me because I see these people that are still standing in, you know, food lines, and they don't have anything. They don't have power. They don't have heat, and we're headed into the winter. And, you know, they're in public housing that, you know, there's mold in the walls, and they're gonna start getting really sick. And the government isn't doing enough to help these people out.
Well, it sounds that, you know, you're foreseeing a difficult 2013 then.
Absolutely. You know, and you know, it's not going to get any better until the government gets in here and spends the money and, you know, pulls the insulation out of the walls and does the mold remediation and you know, fixes these people's homes. You know, these are poor people, you know, and they don't have the money to do it themselves. It's public housing. And, you know, just because these people are poor doesn't mean they're not people. They need to be treated like human beings.
Matt Miner from Rockaway in New York, thank you so much for joining us. Matt, they are describing a very difficult situation around him, especially in the poorer areas of New York that have been affected by Hurricane Sandy. Well, we've told you that we can't speak about 2012 without speaking about the London Olympics. So let's get the experience of two Olympians. And of course, the thing about Olympics is that every time it's on, it just reignites my dreams of being this, you know, great Olympian one day. I might have to give those up. Let me introduce you to Conrad Williams from Team GB 2012, the 400 meter and 400 meter relay Olympian. Welcome, Conrad, and Jordan Duckett, an Olympic torch lighter of 2012.